I'm Judy Swallow in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Here comes the bride. The wedding bells are ringing, and so are the cash registers. A few hundred bucks for that meringue cloud frock, or better still, a few thousand. But hey, this is your one chance to be princess for a day. The last big self-centered bash before the doldrums of wifedom. So throw in the jewel tiara, the garters and the gloves and the skyscraper wedding cake and the silver knife and the hall and the feast for your kin and his. But don't expect Dad to pay any more. Today's bride and groom are older, and now they pick up the tab. A cool 22K for the average exchange of vows. No surprise, more and more couples are starting married life in debt. It's a rollercoaster ride for the bride-to-be. From the moment she says yes to him, she's a prime target for the marketing machine of the wedding trade, worth more than McDonald's and PepsiCo combined. Don't sell yourself short, honey, she's told you, buying a dream. But while she's romancing the gown, she forgets to romance the groom. What a way to start married life. Maybe in need of a marriage counselor, certainly a financial one. Connection listeners, why is the high-priced full trimmings wedding back in vogue? Do you think in marriage as in the market, couples get a return on their investment? Or, cynicism aside, is romance back? Hang the cost. Your numbers to ring, 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, to join the conversation. In a few minutes, we'll be talking to a marriage historian and a psychologist who spends a lot of time dealing with the expectations, inflated and otherwise, of newlyweds. But first, let's have a blast from the past. The way Joan Bennett explained the allure of the puffy gown to Spencer Tracy in the 1950s comedy Father of the Bride.
We've always lived very simply, within our means. Now here, what are we going to do? Put on a big show, a big flashy show that we can't afford.
There's only one time in a girl's life that she can be married in a bridal dress. Just once. And I don't want Kay to miss it the way I did.
Miss it? Miss it?
Well, don't you think I wanted a wedding with all the trimmings?
Well, then why didn't you have it?
Because you didn't want it, so I pretended I didn't either. Oh, Stanley, I don't know how to explain, but a wedding, a church wedding... Oh, it's what every girl dreams of. A bridal dress, orange blossoms, the music. It's something lovely for her to remember all her life. And something for us to remember, too.
From then on, I was a dead duck.
They don't make films like that anymore, and you might as well. They didn't make weddings like that anymore, but apparently they do. We're joined on the line by Millie Martini-Bratton, editor-in-chief of Brides Magazine. Millie, is that what women nowadays expect from a wedding?
Well, I think what women nowadays expect from a wedding is certainly there is a dream that they want to fulfill. They've thought about this for a long time in their lives. But now it's really the couple who's planning the wedding. And what we hear from readers is, what can I do? How can you help me express our personal style? What's important to us as a couple? And to that end, we've seen, yes, the big wedding bash in a hotel, but we've also seen a lot of new trends like destination weddings where 20 or 30 people go off to an island and they have a wonderful family reunion for 4 days, or long weekend weddings where people who don't live together, live close by anymore, plan a family reunion over 3 or 4 days with brunches and softball games and culminating in a wedding and kind of like a family reunion. So it's something different for everyone.
Something different personal style, yeah, but there are the traditions. I mean, how much of the tradition remains? Because certainly the meringue frocks, they're leaping off the shelves.
Well, I think the traditions are very, very important. They are the continuity in our world, that when everything else seems out of control, certain things seem like, yes, there are connections with our past, and there is great hope for the future. And the traditions that are really most important to people are gathering their family and friends and saying, making a public affirmation of what is a private commitment, that they're getting married to each other, wearing something special, which for some may be a pantsuit, for some may be a beautiful ball gown, for some is a sexy slip dress, and saying it in a beautiful ballroom or on a beach or in a Justice of the Peace office. But the traditions of gathering people together, dressing up, and having a toast and cutting a cake are very important.
And it's how you choose to do it that really is what's the fun of it. And also the cost, though. I mean, what is consistent is how much these weddings are costing. $22,000 on average, which means many of them are going to be much, much more than that, which is going up a lot. How have we got here? Because, you know, in the 60s, it was all sort of go down to the beach and slip on a ring and make public vows, and it'll cost you a fiver.
Well, I think society's changed quite a bit. You're right. In the 60s, things were entirely different. In the 1970s, in this country, in America, all kinds of things were happening, and institutions from government to marriage were being seriously looked at. And, of course, women's liberation and the fact that you could live together now without fear of getting pregnant made things different in this country. And we saw all of that reflected in weddings. And in fact, that's one of the things I think is so interesting now. Years ago, Brides Magazine wouldn't talk about living together because it just wasn't done. But now 6 out of 10 couples live together before they get married. And if they have a big wedding, it's their choice. They're choosing to do this, which I think is very interesting.
Was there a Diana factor, the big royal wedding? Because I mentioned in the opening that it was Victoria that gave everybody the idea of these massive gowns and long trains.
Yes, it was.
The Diana factor, how did that influence everything? Did everyone suddenly want a big glamorous wedding with, you know, with the satin gown?
Well, the Diana factor, it was very big. It was right at the beginning of the 1980s, which was a change in our country that was very exuberant. There was a lot of conspicuous consumption, and then here was this royal wedding. And everyone got to see, every little girl who grew up with the idea of being a princess watched a real princess get married. And all of the ceremony involved and the pageantry and the beautiful big dress and the handsome prince, yes, it very definitely influenced people.
And certainly helped the industry. Just give us some idea of the scale of this industry, because I said it was, you know, it's McDonald's and PepsiCo combined. It's huge.
Oh, it is. And when you think about what the bride impacts from the moment she gets engaged until the first anniversary, which is really the span of time that Brides Magazine works with these couples. There are engagement parties. There are pre-wedding parties. The bride and groom are registering for gifts that they'll set up their new home with. They'll go on a honeymoon. It touches so many different industries. If a bride is having 200 guests at her wedding, for example, that's an enormous number of gifts. So the gift and the registry business is very big. If a bride is getting married in a formal dress, of course, that's very, very good for the dress industry. The travel industry, every bride and groom are going to go on a honeymoon, whether it's a 4-day adventure to a local country inn or they're going overseas.
Interesting you say you've got the bride for probably a year before the wedding and maybe a little while afterwards, maybe all those thank you cards and everything. It's sort of a time-limited opportunity for the marketeers, isn't it? You've got to hit her and you've got to hit her hard.
Well, there's a moment as soon as you become engaged, and it is a big change in your life from what your life is now to what it's going to be. And what it's going to be is the two of you together buying a home or living in an apartment together, maybe getting a new apartment, which means moving, which means furnishing. And so all of those decisions come into play, and you're doing those two together. So for marketers, people are now looking for ideas and things, and they're going to be registering for gifts anyway, and wedding gifts are very, very important. So if you can reach the bride at the moment that she's thinking about a dress or a gift or her home or where she's going on her honeymoon, it's very impactful.
Expectations of the wedding, you've made the point, have changed. Is it the same about marriage, different expectations of marriage, or do we still think it's going to be a bed of roses?
I think people are much more aware of what it takes to be married. I think the fact that couples live together before they get married has given them a much better sense of what being married is like. And most couples, and in fact, I think the people who have the best chance of succeeding at marriage realize that it is a partnership and it is something you have to work at and it is a commitment that requires tending and work. I think there's a much greater understanding of it.
Millie Martini-Bratton of Brides Magazine, thanks. Let's bring into the conversation Bill Harley, psychologist and marriage counselor in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Bill Harley, thanks for joining us. Expectations of marriage different, too high?
Well, the basic problem that we have today is that people that marry don't expect to stay married. And that becomes a problem, a huge problem, because a lot of times our expectations are fulfilled in reality. My biggest problem with marriages today is that they don't seem to focus on what they are intended to do, which is to present a couple to a community, and it achieves two objectives. One is that they make vows to each other in front of these witnesses that are going to hold them accountable to those vows.
Okay, but how does the big wedding fit into this picture?
Well, originally, weddings were an important way for a couple to be integrated into the community. In other words, you'd have, in Mediterranean cultures even today, you have weddings that last over a week.
Yeah, but I don't mean historically. I mean, you know, if you have a couple who are putting on a big show, is that because they're really in love with each other or really want to put on a display of being in love with each other? I mean, does the big wedding equate with successful marriage, or the big wedding equates with early divorce?
It's neat. Well, what it's supposed to do is give them a leg up in terms of their integration into the community. In other words, I want to introduce the parents of the bride and groom want to introduce the couple to people who might make a difference in their future. I mean, that's traditionally what weddings are supposed to do. Now, this is now a married couple. We want you to be introduced to the community as a married couple because we want the community, we want you to network with the community and help you be successful in life. The bigger the wedding, actually, the more you're interested in networking. You know, I mean, that's the traditional idea here. So if you spend a lot of money on a wedding, what it means is that you've got a lot of business acquaintances that you're going to be helping, that are going to help you be successful later on in life. It has degenerated, weddings have degenerated into a show for a woman who thinks of this as her big day. And then that, in a way, is a tragedy because the wedding should not be the biggest day of a woman's life. Should be the beginning of a better life later on.
Let's bring back in Millie Martini-Bratton of Brides Magazine. Briefly, Millie, is that the thing? This is the big day. It's the one chance in her life to be the star.
I think it is, for most people, it is a big chance for her to be the center of attention and surrounded by family and friends. But what we hear from readers is that that's important to them, and they want to create an event that will be a great memory for everybody. And particularly after 9/11, we heard, you know, when I thought weddings might become smaller, we heard people say, you know, these people are important to me in my life, and we all seem to get together at rough times, and this is a happy time, and let's make it a great one.
And you have no problem with that. It's great. She should be the star for the day, whatever the cost.
Oh, I don't think whatever. I would not say whatever the cost. No, because we hear from readers. In fact, we have a story that we run continually called Weddings Across America, and there are readers doing absolutely beautiful things. 8 or 10 people out under the Montana sky wearing blue jean jackets over a simple white dress and exchanging vows. And then there's a couple who chooses to get married in the most expensive hotel in New York with 350 guests, and that's their way of expressing this day. It's a very, very broad range, and I think that's what's so fascinating and interesting today to me, and I've been covering weddings for over 25 years.
Millie Martini,
there's so much variety.
Millie, thanks very much for joining us. Millie Martini-Bratton of Bride Magazine. Connection listeners, do you want a big wedding? And if so, why? I'm Judy Swallow in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. This hour is all about big weddings, why we want them, to the extent we'll even go into debt for them. Our guest, Dr. Bill Harley. Let's also bring into the conversation Dr. Stephanie Kuntz. She's Professor of History and Family Studies at Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. She's writing a book about the history of marriage. So Dr. Kuntz, just before the break, we were talking about expectations changed after 9/11. Let's take an even longer view. Have our expectations of the wedding and the marriage afterwards changed? Where are we now?
Well, they've hugely changed. They've been changing.
for centuries, marriage was not about the love between two individuals. It was about making alliances between families, as Bill was saying earlier. Then, at the end of the 19th century, it became a question of free choice, increasingly marriage for love instead of for more practical considerations. And, of course, for women, it still meant, however, that because you were economically dependent on men, you really had to think about the economic prospects of your husband. It's really only in the last 30 or 40 years that marriage has become a truly free choice, and that means that some marriages can be better than ever, but it also means that there's an inherent instability in marriage, because if the main purpose of marriage is love and personal satisfaction, then it becomes more pressing to leave if you don't feel you're getting that. So I think people are very concerned. You know, I don't necessarily agree with Bill that people who marry today don't expect to stay married. I think they do, but I think they're worried about how to stay married, and they're looking for talismans. We tend to invent traditions when we're worried about things. You know, the Sunday meal was invented in the late 19th century when the male breadwinner family came into being. It was not a tradition. It was a way of saying, gosh, I'm anxious about the fact that the men are leaving the home and the women are staying at home, so let's have this new tradition that glosses over that new difference between men and women. And I think we do similar things with weddings.
You think it is the very expensive talisman? Because I was going to ask you, why in these days when the woman is the breadwinner as well, when she doesn't have to be dependent on her husband, do you go through this ritual which represents the virgin being given to the man?
Well, that's a very good question. I think there's a whole mix of complicated motives. You know, I mean, I think that Bill is right that there is a sense in which a public wedding invites your community, your friends, and family into your lives and says, you know, we want you to take this seriously. This isn't just a personal relationship. I mean, sadly, it really is a personal relationship nowadays. You can get along just fine without your in-laws. But a public wedding is a way of saying, we don't want to get along just fine without our in-laws and our friends and our neighbors, and we'd like you to validate our relationship. I think that part of it's very healthy. But I think also that as people look for talismans, good luck charms, some tangible things that say, look, we've invested in this relationship, it's going to last, American consumerism being what it is, I think some of these people may be thinking, well, the more I spend, the better the product.
Dr. Harley, we're talking about the huge costs of weddings and how the bride gets on this roller coaster. Is anxiety the marketeer's best tool with a bride-to-be?
I think that the introductory clip that you had where a woman comes forward at the age of 45 and says, one of the most disappointing experiences of my life was my wedding, because that was something I'd always looked forward to having, and I wanted it to be a memorable event, and I've gone through my life without one. It's like her husband said that he was doomed as soon as she said that. He had to provide for his daughter's wedding, which brings up an interesting point, and that is that I still believe that in most weddings, parents pay for them. The weddings that I've all attended within the past year, the bride and groom never paid a dime on any of them. As a matter of fact, the last one I attended was my niece's wedding, who's 31, and her honeymoon was paid for as well. So, I mean, she goes into this marriage completely debt-free, even though the wedding was probably $30,000, $40,000. So the basic feeling that I have is that people still can have expensive weddings and yet not experience huge debt load. But I will say this, that as your program implies, going into marriage with debt is not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
And
so,
if you want...
Look, ladies, have you been dreaming about your wedding since you were a little girl, whatever the cost? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. But it's not a lady first. It's Jim from Baton Rouge in Louisiana. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you doing? I was the participants that was tied to the tracks in front of a monster steamroller of a wedding event. And it was very much an event for my this should tell you how much they matter, my ex-wife's mother and her, and very much for her mom, that it was her sister had gotten married in Vegas with a little fun little thing, and then my ex decided that there was just, she just could not deny her mother.
Wow, Jim, it sounds just like a bad
opportunity. And it was a heck of a party. I mean, and I certainly won't forget it, but I have to agree, it's not, it's the wedding should not be what's the most memorable thing. It's the fact that you've started a new life with somebody, and that life with that person is what's supposed to be the memorable thing. And if I was that guy from the clip earlier, I'd just be darn well depressed that somehow I wasn't memorable at all in her life.
Yeah, Jim, tell me, you described it as a railroad marriage, her mother driving it, her trying to please her mother. Do you think those months before the wedding, you felt a little bit left out, and maybe that helped fuel the divorce?
No, not at all. And to be honest with you, I'm 100% in favor of the guy being, you know, fully involved. Okay, it was the fact that she wanted a really, really big wedding, and well, you know, you just kind of go along with it, but then you're there all the time and participating in it. It's certainly not something that I tried to duck out of. It's the fact that it was this major production really was pretty much out of my hands, but you know, you dive in.
Do you think it affected your marriage? Huge expectations for the wedding from her, huge expectations from the marriage as well?
Yeah, I do. I think it was that she very much, through the planning, a lot of it was this whole storybook princess thing. I mean, it really did start off, she wanted the Cinderella castle at Disney World until she found out the usurious prices they had on it. But it was very much, I mean, this whole fairy tale, whole deal on the wedding, and it seemed that, you know, she expected, you know, everything to be that same fairy tale smooth ride all the way through with very little work involved.
Jim, thanks for your call. Dr. Harley, familiar tale.
Yeah, my comment would right away be that the way you plan your wedding is probably a very good predictor of how successful your marriage will be. If the two of you work together on it and you're both happy with the way it turns out, chances are your marriage will turn out that way. If one of you takes over and steamrolls the other person's wishes or doesn't even ask the person how they feel, chances are your marriage won't last very long. John Gottman, of course, has done a lot of research on this kind of thing in University of Washington. And those of us that kind of keep track of the very latest in marriage research can know that how you plan, how you make your decisions early on in your marriage is an excellent predictor of how long your marriage will last.
So you should be talking to each other and work it out between you.
Yeah, if you have a marriage where both, a marriage ceremony where both of you are involved and you're both looking at it as a way of introducing yourself to the community that you want to become a part of, and you want to give them notice that you are now a couple and you're now together as a unit and you should be thought of as a couple and you want to go forward in life together as a loving couple and you want to be known that way, then I'd say the marriage ceremony is a terrific thing to do. But it shouldn't cost that much to achieve that objective.
Dr. Koons, really interesting there about Jim's call is he's talking about his wife, well, then his bride, deferring to the mother, getting into this railroad of a marriage. It seems that once it comes to planning for the wedding, the most liberated woman suddenly becomes this sexual stereotype. The little girl who wants the big splash and mummy's there saying, yes, I wanted it exactly the same. And this is where an awful lot of problems arise. It seems like we haven't come an awful long way at all.
Well, I think that we've come a tremendously long way. I think the roles and options of women have changed more in the last 30 years than in the last 3,000. And I think our expectations of marriage are therefore really changing very rapidly. You know, I mean, it is just everything we used to think we knew about how marriage operates is in flux. The John Gottman research that Bill was talking about shows that a lot of the old stereotypes about what we thought made a marriage work doesn't work. Collaboration is really important. On the other hand, Gottman points out that one of the best predictors of a marriage is not if a man lets a woman steamroll over him, but if he accepts influence from his wife when she asks for change, because women are coming into marriage with more rapidly changing expectations about what that marriage will be than men are. So, you know, more egalitarian women are more likely to get divorced, but more traditional men are more likely to get divorced. Everything is in flux. It's very confusing, and I think that some people, you know, with the best of intentions, make this mistake of thinking that, well, if we just have put on the perfect show, you know, that will protect us from making all of these much harder daily decisions about how to work out a marriage.
Okay, let's hear from our brides-to-be or grooms-to-be, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Natasha
Hello.
Is calling us. Hi, Natasha, from Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes.
Hi, Natasha. Married, divorced, getting married?
Well, actually, I think a little bit of all of that.
All in one day?
God, no. I am divorced. I've been divorced for a little over 10 years now. I'm in my late 30s, and I've been engaged now for 4 years, and I'm doing it all differently this time.
How did you do it last time?
Well, I must agree with the doctors. I've been really fascinated by this. I'm sitting out on my deck going through magazines, wedding magazines, and kind of getting ideas. And the first time I went into it, you know, I really didn't give it much thought. It wasn't that I did want a big wedding, but it wasn't because I felt that would solidify marriage. It was because I wanted a big wedding.
Why?
That was my dream since I was young, you know, to have that, you know, the princess day. And you know, I wanted to have that happen for me, a feeling of importance. And I look back on it now and I think, you know, I really wasn't thinking of the marriage. I was thinking more of the wedding and planning the wedding and, you know, really didn't think about why we were getting married and what this meant. And I think if I had, in fact, I know that I have because I'm doing it differently now, I would have done it differently. My fiancé and I now have been together for quite a while. He had cancer, and we successfully battled that together. And at the time, right before he went into treatment, the thought crossed our mind, do we want to get married now before he goes through treatment? And I thought, you know, you're going to be fine. We want to have this marriage blessed by our family. We want them all to be there, and they live all over the world. Actually, my family lives in Europe, and you know, they're kind of flung to the far corners, and we want them to be there for that moment. And so we waited, and I'm glad we did, because now our wedding, which is, we haven't actually set the date yet. Everybody kind of laughs about it, but it will be next year, and it's going to be on our favorite beach down in Florida, because that we consider our church. And our family is going to be there in a very, very small, intimate ceremony. And we're going to express our love for each other there with our family present and then have a big party over the weekend with all of our family.
But, Natasha, do you think that the first time round, the big wedding of a by itself was a mistake, or just the fact that you and your fiancé didn't talk about it? I mean, if you'd had this dream all your life, you wanted the big white wedding, well,
yeah,
you know, you realize your dream.
Well, I did. I did do that, and it wasn't all that. You know, it when it came right down to it, it was very empty because the person that I chose to marry at that time wasn't the one. And it was a real eye-opener for me where my head was, you know, where I was listening. My mother, it wasn't with the family because my mother could care less. You know, we could have been married at the justice of the peace and it wouldn't have mattered. She wanted me to be happy. I just kind of fooled myself, I think, into it. And I think really in America more than in Europe, because I've spent a good deal of time over there as well, and I can't speak about every country, but I think here we really buy into the media blitz of the perfect wedding. Everywhere you look, even with the celebrities, it's the big deal. And And I think we can tend, if we're not really focusing on why we're doing this, I think we can lose focus of what this is all about. And I think that would be, you know, if I could say anything to any new bride that's listening, you know, of course, do the wedding that you want, but be realistic about it. Understand,
and do it with the guy you want. Yeah.
Natasha, understand thanks. Why you're doing it and really put some thought into what is going to make that day special, not the gown, not the huge cake, not impressing other people, but, you know, what means a lot to the both of you, and that's what makes it most special is that intimacy, in my opinion.
Natasha, thanks very much indeed. Dr. Holly, is that common problem that, hey, we want the big wedding, and you forget to actually have a look at the guy you're marrying?
Yeah, Natasha actually has said a lot of things that are extremely important. I would have said them, except I would have been interpreted as being disrespectful, I think. But the basic idea is that she says that you want a wedding that both of you plan and both of you enjoy. And that should be the way your whole life turns out.
But is the problem here that we're talking about two different things sometimes? Is that she's talking about this dream, you dream of being Barbie in the little white frock and having this wonderful party and being the center of attention, and marriage is something completely different. Is there a disconnect, maybe?
Well, I think when somebody marries, they have to reevaluate all their dreams, because every dream you have when you're married has to be considered in the context of the other person. And the question is, will this dream that I've had make sense in this relationship? I become a new person when I'm married, because now I have to consider this other person in every decision I make, because every decision will affect the other person. Every decision the other person makes will affect me. So if you have a wedding where you come away from it and say, that was just a great experience for both of us, chances are, if you make all your decisions that way in your marriage, you'll have a wonderful marriage.
We're talking about big weddings this hour and the marriage that goes with it. Does small and simple mean a more successful marriage? Or is there something else that ensures a strong union? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK if you're a bride-to-be and would like to join the conversation. I'm Judy Swallow. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection. We're talking about fairy tale weddings. Hang the expense this hour. With us, Drs. Bill Harley and Stephanie Kuntz. Bill counsels couples, and Stephanie studies their behavior over time. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Stephanie, just before the break, Natasha there said something we all pricked up our ears to. She said he wasn't the one. We've been talking about fairy tale weddings. It leads to marriage myths, doesn't it? The one, it's a myth.
Well, yes, I think so. I think more and more we expect that the other partner will be perfect instead of understanding that there are lots of ways to make a relationship worth work, and no one individual can meet every need in your life. You know, I chair a group of researchers called the Council on Contemporary Families, and so I'm privileged to see this research from, you know, psychologists and sociologists and anthropologists. And one of the consistent themes we're finding is that people have begun to think of themselves at the same time as they have these big weddings inviting the public to see them. They increasingly expect so much from just one other individual. They expect all their needs to be met. And the reality is that that's not going to happen. And so, of course, we get disappointed. Somehow we have to find a more reasonable way of getting a lot of our personal gratification from the things that, in fact, do mean a lot to us nowadays, from our work, from our neighbors, from our friends, from other kinds of social networks, as well as our husband. I often say, you know, I often think to myself in terms of my marriage, if I didn't have, I couldn't love him half as much if he was the whole world to me. I wouldn't love him as much as I do now. It's because he's just a part of my world, and you have to construct a world that brings him in, but that does not make him out to be this absolute perfect thing. I think that that over expectation. Now, having said that, let me say the other side of it is I also have a lot of books come over my desk from this cottage image of people who talk about the surrendered wife, and that the way to make things better is to tamp down your expectations if you're a woman of marriage. And I would say that's not true. I think we have to tamp down our expectations of perfection, but that we have to maintain our expectations of fairness and collaboration.
Bill, do you think that the great, big, expensive, lavish fairy tale wedding actually plays into the marriage myth unhealthily, so that you do get the bride saying, this is my special day and he's got to be the one, and nobody's the one?
Yeah, I think we have to go back to, what was it, Natasha? What was her name?
Natasha, yeah.
Yeah. Her point, and I think that what she was saying was that when I was married, all I cared about was being the center of attention and having a wedding where people would remember me. And she wasn't thinking of her fiancé. She wasn't thinking of the man that she had married. I make my living helping couples learn how to meet each other's needs. And in order to do that, you don't have to be perfect, and you don't have to meet every need. You have to meet enough of a person's need for you to be in love.
But isn't it very difficult to say, you know, you've got to be paying attention to him? Because if you're a bride-to-be, and all of a sudden you're at the center of this mega industry, really, and you've got people buzzing around you saying, no, darling, buy this gown, buy that gown, you need this, you must have that, get the guest list, what sort of invitation do you want, and somebody is spending on you, or you are spending yourself more than you've ever spent on yourself in your life. It's a most self-centered period, isn't it? It's not healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the point that Natasha made is just, I can't express it as clearly as she did, which was, to some extent, it doomed her marriage. It was the attitude she had. I don't agree with her that she married someone who wasn't right for her. I think that I've proven thousands of times over and over again that we can take somebody who she wouldn't have thought was right for her, and he becomes right for her because they become integrated with each other. But the basic idea is that she was only thinking about herself, and she went into this marriage assuming that if I'm happy, we'll be happy. And it didn't turn out that way.
Let's hear from some happy brides or grooms or fathers of the brides. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Rich is calling us from Newton, Mass. Hi, Richard.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
I've been the father of a couple of brides, and with a little bit of good fortune, I'll be the father of one more bride. And I, listening to your program this morning, I thought that we missed one very important point, one very important word, actually, which is celebration. We've always looked at, most people that I know, looked at a wedding as a very, very large celebration of something that we hope is going to turn out to be a wonderful relationship and, of course, a family. Those that come from good, solid, happy marriages hope that their children will wind up in the same types of marriages or relationships. Nobody seemed to mention this, so we celebrate when our children meet their spouses and decide to join together to make a family.
So it's worth it having the great big wedding, and not just for her, but for all of you, yeah?
Well, I think you can make the celebration any way you want, the way the bridegroom families want to celebrate, depending on lots of things. One of the most important things are financial circumstances. If you like large parties or large celebrations, I don't think that is there's anything wrong with that as long as you don't lose sight of what you are doing.
Richard, thanks for your call. I think there's a lot of daughters who'd love a dad like you. You just can't get the role in Father of the Bride. I think both of my guests would say hear, hear to that, wouldn't you, Stephanie?
Well, yes, although, of course, and I totally agree that it's a celebration. But, of course, we've got to be very clear about what we're celebrating. Are we celebrating that you're getting married, that a woman has caught a man, that she is the center of attention, that the man, that the woman's family can afford to have this great big spread? Or are we celebrating that we're starting a new journey that we're going to work on together? And so I think that has a lot to do with what kinds of decisions you make about what kind of celebration you have. I mean, I have to say, I'm pretty kind of low on the consumerist and myself. And I went to a wedding a couple months ago where they spent $30,000 on the wedding. And I kept thinking, oh, my gosh, that is the down payment on a very nice house for their future together. And these were people who were living in apartments, you know. So I was a little shocked at that. But, of course, I think that celebration is a very important thing. And as your caller said, it should be realistically attuned to what kind of finances you can and want to spend. But you got to bear in mind you're celebrating the beginning of a new journey, not the culmination. That's that whole American myth that, you know, the wedding, the fade out, they lived happily ever after. We do that in all sorts of things.
What do you think about that, Bill? What if you're a real party person and you really think the most important thing in your life is to have a great, big, wonderful family celebration? Can we look at it from a positive point of view?
Well, certainly one of the three purposes of a wedding, celebration, the vows before witnesses, and the introduction of the couple to the community. Those, as far as I'm concerned, are the three important purposes of a wedding. The problem that I have, and Stephanie and I think would agree on this, is that the least important part of this is the celebration. The vows are extremely important to understand what it is you're promising to do in this relationship. And then for the community to become a part of your life, for you to be supported by the community, and for them to help you become successful, I think is an incredibly important part of a wedding. If it's a big party, and what you want to do is invite 1,000 people and just show them a good time, my argument is it depends on what you can afford. And if you can't afford it, I think that of the three purposes, it would be the least useful and most frivolous.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Let's hear from somebody who hasn't actually got divorced. Jamie's calling us from Wilton in North Carolina. Hi, Jamie.
Hello.
I gather you're married.
Yeah, we've been married for 20 years, happily married. Small wedding, 25 people by a rabbi, which I'm happen to be a Christian, but in deference to my wife's family, we were married by a rabbi. It was fabulous. But I think what your guests are alluding to, but hasn't really been said, is what attracted me to my wife, and I think what's held our marriage together so well is neither of us married one another to gain a sense of identity from that other person. We both had a very strong sense of our own identity, and so it doesn't cause this. Our marriage is not this codependent thing where we're demanding something from the other person. I think that's really important.
Important to marry really your best friend, not buying into these myths is what you seem to be saying. You don't marry the one because there isn't the one.
That's right, and I heard one of your guests say that I think my wife could be happily married to a lot of different people because she's not going into the marriage as her source of happiness, but as a partnership, and that's how we've done it.
Dr. Haley, would you agree with that? Dr. Harley, sorry, would you agree?
Not really. I feel that in marriage, you do marry a person who becomes the source of your happiness. And as a matter of fact, if you're not the source of your spouse's happiness, I think you're missing out on a great opportunity. When you marry, you have the opportunity to make a difference in the life of another human being. And I think that one of the things that motivated me to get married was that I wanted to make a big difference in somebody's life. And you couldn't do that in a better way than in marriage. I expected the other person to feel the same way about me. Now, I've been married 40 years. I'm still in love with my wife, Joyce. We're both in love. It's clear that we're in love. Everybody knows we're in love. And that's because we are the source of each other's happiness. That doesn't mean we're codependent. It doesn't mean that we can't live without each other. But it does mean that we've learned how to accommodate each other, how to make each other important in our lives.
Jamie,
and I think that's an important part of marriage.
Thanks for your call. You brought up an important point. What I'd like to get from both of you before we go, because we're running out of time, is that these long-standing marriages are a rarity, really, because you've got just over 2 million marriages per year, over 1 million divorces. How serious a problem is that, Stephanie? What can be done to turn that round?
Well, first of all, you have to be realistic about the fact that not all of it's going to be turned around. And also, the divorce rate does get exaggerated. You know, they project how many marriages will end on the basis of how many marriages will last to 40-year anniversary. The fact is that even though more marriages are ending in divorce, because of the extension of the lifespan, more couples are celebrating their 40th anniversary as well. The divorce rate has come down actually by 26% since 1980, and I think that's partly because men and women are learning to adjust their expectations to the new roles of two-earner families and of women's changing expectations. But it's also come down because fewer people are getting married. That's another piece of it. I think from my study of history, we have to recognize that that family diversity is here to stay. Not everybody is going to be able to make the other person the source of their happiness for the 40 or 50 years that a marriage now can last.
And Dr. Holly,
have to do is learn to make commitments both in and outside of marriage.
Dr. Holly, you know, a real cynic like me could say, and renewal of vows or divorce and get a second marriage, it's all good for business, isn't it?
Is a what business?
Renewal of vows or a second marriage and divorce, all good for business.
Well, I don't want to make my living preventing people from getting divorced, but if I've got to make my living at something and I can actually achieve that objective, where here's a couple ready to get divorced and a year from now they'll be happily married for the rest of their lives, to me it's a good way to make a living.
Dr. Holly, thanks very much for joining us. Dr. Bill Holly, psychologist, marriage counselor, and founder of Marriage Builders in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Also, you heard Dr. Stephanie Kuntz, who's an historian and national co-chair of the Council on Contemporary Families. Earlier this hour, we spoke to Millie Martini-Bratton, who's editor-in-chief of Brides Magazine. Connection listeners, you can continue our conversation on our website, www.theconnection.org. I'm Judy Swallow. You've been listening to The Connection from NPR.
Darling, we'll have a big celebration.
Celebration.